all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Real information. Good conversation. Unabashedly Wisconsin. Here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Welcome back to the second hour of Up North News. It's a Monday, February 13th. I'm Pat Kreitlow. It's nice to have you along. Those of you watching us on Facebook or Twitter know that we've been juggling some things as we move on to a different platform. Hopefully you find it a bit more appealing, tells you what guests are coming up. We can remind you of things like, oh, there's the phone number there, 844-967-2789 or 715-388-7155. And you can send us an email, radio at upnorthnewswi.com. Coming up this hour, well, today we have interviews with two of the four candidates for a seat on the Wisconsin Supreme Court. In our last hour, we talked to Dane County Judge Everett Mitchell. Coming up at 7:15, we will visit with Milwaukee County Judge Janet Protasiewicz. And as a reminder, you can catch both of those interviews as podcasts. Just go to civicmedia.us, click on shows, look for Up North News Radio for our show page. You will see a listing of every hour that we do. So 6 a.m. and 7 a.m. each day, each hour is a separate episode of a podcast. And you can subscribe or you can just listen right there on the site in case there's a show that you missed and want to catch again. We should note as well that we have reached out to the other two candidates, Waukesha County Judge Jennifer Doro and former State Supreme Court Justice Dan Kelly, to invite them for interviews as well. And we are waiting for any confirmation from them that they would want to talk to you. Nicole Slavin and Kate Walsh from Motherhood for Good will discuss what busy parents need to know about the important issues in the state Supreme Court race. That's part of our Motherhood Monday segment that comes up every other Monday at 7:30, including today. And later this hour, the Civic Media Homeroom brings us Terry Bell from the newsroom with three things that you need to know to start the week. You can follow us all day long at Up North News at UpNorthNewsWI. On social media, upnorthnewswi.com is our website. We have a question of the week as well that we're going to put up as a post later asking about tipping and whether 15% is still a customary tip for good service. Do you tip more? Do you often tip less? What do you think of tip jars? Should places just raise the prices and pay their workers more and not put the pressure on you to tip? One way or another, you're invited to comment when we post that up on our Facebook page a little bit later on today. Several headlines that we want to get to today, including, well, the unidentified flying objects are something that we just don't know that much about yet. But obviously, with one being shot down over Lake Huron by a contingent that included planes that were, you know, based in Madison, needless to say, we're going to want to know more. So we're going to watch as that debris is collected and analyzed and see if it's something real. Was it something threatening? Was it just surveillance? Was it just, you know, somebody messing with us, essentially, to see what kind of inroads they can make to the air defense systems over Canada and the U.S. Much to be followed. So rather than speculate a lot about it, we'll simply make that note. I did find it curious that Senator Ron Johnson, who so frequently is either putting out posts that are grievances or conspiracy theories, put out something rather rational about this when the one object was shot down over Lake Huron, in making note that we need to do more to upgrade and replace the large power transformers that we have at sites around the country, basically one of the most important parts of the electric grid. And he's right, our infrastructure does need replacing. So I'm not sure why he was opposed to infrastructure updates before and why he specifically called on these large electric transformers to be replaced. Again, I guess I should apologize for the cynicism, but I immediately thought, what's in it for him? Why is he referencing just this? And why so specifically about a piece of that electric grid? So I'll follow it. We'll look into it a bit more. I just find it rather curious because it's not in his usual wheelhouse of things that he likes to talk about or post about. As again, throughout the weekend on Right Wing TV, he was telling us what a victim that he was. The case of the fake Wisconsin electors for Donald Trump, of a conspiracy of which Ron Johnson was very nearly an active part on January 6th, that there is a lawsuit against those fake electors. That lawsuit will stay in state court. A judge ruled on Friday that the case cannot be brought to federal court, as the defendants were asking, probably thinking they could get a more receptive trial there. Perhaps it would go to the U.S. Supreme Court, dominated by conservatives. But a judge said that election, or that lawsuit rather, will stay in state court and proceed from there as people continue to look for accountability for people, including Bob Spindell, a Republican member of the Wisconsin Elections Commission, who served as one of the fake electors, who filled out fraudulent paperwork claiming that Donald Trump had won. And Democrats in the legislature late last week once again called on Senate Republican leader Devin Lemieux to remove Bob Spindell from the State Elections Commission. And of course, he is refusing to do that. One other quick note, there is a funeral today for a Milwaukee police officer who was killed in the line of duty. I just want to say quickly, there were some garbage tweets out there led by a right-wing radio host in Milwaukee who made claim that Governor Evers didn't even think about lowering the flags to half staff and had to be goaded into it. When anybody who knows about how the governor's office works knows that they call for the flags to be lowered on the day of the funeral once they know when the funeral is. And this case was treated no differently. And to claim otherwise is just ghoulish and proves what a garbage person you are. Our interview with Judge Janet Protasiewicz is coming up next on Up North News Radio. We are joined now on Up North News Radio by Milwaukee County Judge Janet Protasiewicz. Judge, good morning. Hello. Good to have you here.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for taking the time. I know that these campaigns are long. You're covering an entire state. You have a contentious primary here with multiple candidates. And as we enter the final phase before the primary, let's just start with your own overview. Obviously, we're going to get past the cliche. You think you're in a strong position. You've done a good job. But what have you thought of the experience and the nationwide interest in the race?
Well, it's really interesting. I tell people, and I mean it, I've been having the time of my life. I have been meeting so many people I would not have otherwise met. I thought I was pretty well traveled around the state of Wisconsin, and I was clearly wrong about that. I have been all over. I have now favorite restaurants in every city that I go to, and I just really, the outpouring of support from across the state, how completely and totally engaged people are in this race has really struck me everywhere I go. Last weekend, I was in Prairie du Chien and Richland Center and Viroqua, and, you know, large turnouts in every single venue because people care so much about this race and they care so much about their state. So, yes, I think we're in a relatively strong position. I don't take anything for granted, obviously. We're working as hard as we can, but it's been a wonderful experience.
Good. Well, I appreciate the overview. So now let's take a step back and introduce our listeners to you, and then we'll get into the issues and the importance of the race as well. So, I laugh because I've been telling people I was able to spell and say your name almost from the get-go. And that's my old Polish grandmother would be so proud of me if she were here. But that easy icebreaker aside, can you tell folks a bit about your own, you know, early story, and then we'll get into your experience?
Sure. I was born and raised on the south side of Milwaukee to teachers, really hardworking parents. And you know, they instilled in me a number of things. You're going to work really hard, you're going to study hard, and you're going to give back to your community. And that's just what I've done. I worked my way through undergrad. I worked while I was in law school. I wasn't able to work my way through law school, meaning I did have debts when I left law school. But what I really wanted to do was continue to give back to the community and work with people. So when I graduated from Marquette Law School, I was very honored to be appointed an assistant district attorney in Milwaukee County. And I worked there for a quarter of a century, handling really complicated, you know, criminal litigation issues across the board. Worked at Children's Court. Milwaukee County has a Children's Court separate from a downtown division where we work with children who are, you know, abused or neglected that need services. Children who are in homes that aren't appropriate for them. We're working very, very hard to get them permanency, to have them adopted by, you know, fit, loving, adoptive parents. And so, you know, I had Children's Court work, worked hard protecting victims, worked hard protecting our community for those 25 years. And then I decided to run for judge in Milwaukee County and been honored to have that position since 2014.
I have to ask you the same question I asked Judge Mitchell, whose interview we heard in our last hour, because, again, the way you lay out your experience, it lends itself to this question as well. You see the real difference you're making in individuals' lives on an almost daily basis. You know the state Supreme Court is important, obviously, but it is much more cerebral, theoretical, or whatever, not that day-to-day interaction and changing people's lives that way. So, what in your case, what made you say, okay, I'm ready to move from this position with individuals I'm helping or guiding or sentencing all the time to something more like a state Supreme Court?
Well, I'm honored and I love the position that I currently hold. So I want to start out with that. But I would say this, the stakes are absolutely so high in this race. I started thinking about this race last April. And it is not a cliche when I say I got into this race to save democracy for our state. I mean it. Everything that we care about is on the line, and everything that we care about is likely going to come into our Supreme Court chamber. And, you know, I have to be careful with how I structure responses, given that I'm running for a judicial post. But I tell people about my values and values in regard to our gerrymandering and our maps issue. And I say that everybody deserves to be represented and represented in a fair way and where their votes are meaningful. And, you know, Wisconsin's a battleground state. And you look at the state of Wisconsin and you look at how close the statewide races are. And then you look at our maps and you have to recognize that something is wrong and that our Supreme Court allowed that as compared to the dissent, you know, in the gerrymandering case, which I would say that I would agree with. Women's right to choose. I can tell you that, you know, that 1849 near total ban on abortion is going to stand if one of the far right extreme opponents wins this race. And I'm sorry, I think you were going to say something and I cut you off, but
No, go ahead.
I think it's likely that even the results of the 2024 presidential election are going to come into the Supreme Court chamber, just like the results of the 2020 election did. So I think that the stakes are just so incredibly high, and that's why I decided to run.
And that's actually where I wanted to go to next. First off, none of us thought at this point in our lives we would be talking seriously about the need to protect and save democracy, and yet here we are. And this interview is timely. It comes on the heels of Justice Kurofsky releasing information about how a judicial panel essentially chided her for comments she made when former President Trump was suing to try to throw out so many Wisconsin ballots. And Justice Kurofsky basically said, look, we should not be weaponizing the judicial discipline process to silence justices. And the justice said through her attorney, she said, look, we were, in so many words, we're trying to save democracy here. I can't imagine this is something you ever thought we'd be at, and that it would motivate somebody like you and others to run for a position on a state Supreme Court. But that's the era that we're in.
That's 100% accurate. You know, I was in a pretty comfortable position in my life. I just came off of 3 years in a homicide sexual assault, you know, assignment. I'm doing an assignment that's obviously meaningful, but not doesn't have the same kind of emotion or challenges that assignment had. And you also understand how challenging these races are and the type of character assassination that goes on. And so it took me, when I started thinking in April and talking to stakeholders about this race and the path to victory, probably took me a month to say, yes, I'm willing to do it. And I'm willing and honored to do it and honored to have the support I have just because of that, because of saving our democracy. That's why I'm doing it.
I'm not expecting you to be an expert on law schools, but I feel like this question has to be asked anyway. Both you and Judge Mitchell went to prestigious law schools right here in Wisconsin, Marquette and the University of Wisconsin. And the two conservative candidates in the race both went to the law school that was set up by TV preacher Pat Robertson. And while that school has, I guess, tried to make improvements in its accreditation and its image and everything else, still, the whole notion of choosing to attend a law school with that kind of foundation, I think says something to a certain segment of the Wisconsin population. Do you get asked about that very much, the difference between where a potential justice chooses to start their law education?
I don't get asked about it, and I'm glad you asked it. The fact that they both went to Regent, you know, University is a little bit of a peculiar coincidence to me, quite frankly, that you would have two people who went to this particular university. And, you know, you have a university that's not particularly highly rated. I don't even know if it was accredited, quite frankly, when Dan Kelly went there. I don't know why someone would choose to go there unless you have, you know, views that really align with the views that they have. And I think Pat Robertson, you know, formed that with that Christian, you know, network that he formed. So obviously, the fact that the two of them went to Regent University obviously raises some red flags for me.
One of the candidates cited the Lawrence v. Texas case, which basically says, you know, government can't come into the bedroom of a same-sex couple. You know, this candidate said this was one of the worst cases of judicial activism or overreach that they had ever seen. Was Lawrence v. Texas a judicial overreach?
The majority opinion wasn't a judicial overreach. What Jennifer Doerr stated about it troubles me, mm-hmm. and troubles me on a number of levels. Troubles me as concerning any respect that she would have for, you know, homosexual couples, any respect for, you know, privacy issues with how people conduct their lives, questions as to marriage equality and what she would think of that going forward. I mean, she was very, very clear as to, you know, what she thought about that case. So, you know, it is extremely concerning to me when we are dealing with people, in my opinion, who are as extreme as the two candidates on the right are.
Well, because we can take that right into the, you know, the state's 1849 abortion ban, the liberties and the privacy rights, not just of same-sex couples, but of women making health decisions. There certainly seem to be parallels to lay people like me and everybody else.
There are. And I just will tell you that Jennifer Doerr talked about the Dobbs decision. She said that she believed it was correct and that it, quote, honors the constitutional framework, close quote. Dan Kelly was on record before the Dobbs decision suggesting that Roe v. Wade was wrongly decided, well before the Supreme Court overturned it. He's also accepted the endorsement of groups seeking to end all abortions. So I think we know what those two, you know, candidates would do very likely in the event of, you know, cases that have to do with the, you know, 1849 ban. I mean, I can tell you I am 100% certain that that ban will stay in place if either one of them prevails in April.
Final question is about, you know, the general election campaign. Under the assumption that you are one of the two candidates that comes through the primary, as does either Judge Doerr or former Justice Kelly. Again, we've already seen the national attention that is going to come to this race. What concerns do you have about what that campaign is going to get to be like with national attention if you are a part of it?
I don't know that I would have concerns. My biggest concerns about these races always have to do with outside money coming in. And we know that our United States Supreme Court allowed that in Citizens United. So we have a situation where, you know, I think potentially substantial amounts of money. We already know $6 million has been spent on this race so far, and we're 10 days outside of the primary. So I don't think the national attention is a bad thing. I think that's a good thing for the state of Wisconsin, and it certainly magnifies and has a light on, you know, all of these important issues. It's the spending, I think, is certainly an issue. We're hearing, you know, one group has pledged anywhere between $10 and $30 million to Dan Kelly in this race. It's shocking amounts of money.
It really is. Milwaukee County Judge Janet Protasiewicz, thank you so much for talking about your candidacy for state Supreme Court. We really appreciate the visit.
Thank you so much.
And we will have Motherhood Mondays coming up with Nicole Slavin and Kate Duffy in just a minute. You're up north.
Follow Up North News with our daily newsletter. Go to our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and click newsletter on the top banner. Once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
So Mondays are always going to be a little special around here now, thanks in part to the two women we're going to hear from in a minute. Motherhood Mondays will take place every other Monday, and on the alternate Mondays, we will have Movement Mondays, where we talk to people in the movement to clean up politics. But during Motherhood Mondays, we try to make politics a little bit more approachable, understandable, especially for busy moms, especially for people like Kate Duffy and Nicole Slavin that want to help us all understand these things. Ladies, good morning. Nice to see you here.
Good morning. Nice to see you too. Thanks for having us back.
Oh gosh, it's definitely our pleasure here. We have new software that we're trying out for the show here. So if you're watching on Facebook or Twitter, we have our bright shiny faces here and Aaron too and Aaron's studio. But here we all are, and we're talking a bit about how we make certain things more approachable. And I can't think of a better one right now than the race for state Supreme Court, because as it stands, spring elections aren't very well attended anyway. The turnout is quite low. State Supreme Court elections get a little bit more attention, but really, this one deserves a lot of attention, Nicole and Kate. As you talk to moms and other folks and they go, hey, you pay attention to this politics stuff. Do I really need to know about the state Supreme Court race? What do you tell them?
Absolutely, we do. Mm-hmm. And what we do with our kind of network and community and audience in particular, like you said, it's a lot of busy moms who, you know, are trying to pay attention to politics. There's a lot of noise out there, and we try to break things down in a way that makes sense for them. Obviously, we are just over a week out from the primary election, which is next Tuesday. And so what we thought we would do today is talk about a couple of the things that are always talked about with the Supreme Court race. Obviously, the commercials have started, so we're seeing a lot of those. There's a couple of talking points that are brought up time and time again. And we thought what we would do is kind of break those down and talk about what they actually mean and how they would actually come into effect if there is a shift in the Supreme Court with the election of a progressive judge.
All right. Where do you want to start?
Let's go ahead and start with abortion access, the big one, right? Do you want to talk through that one, Nicole?
Sure. So I think as many of us know, back when the Dobbs decision came into play, Wisconsin shifted to an old 1849 law that outlawed abortion. So overnight, Wisconsin changed and flipped, and there was no longer abortion access. There is a lawsuit that was brought by our Attorney General Josh Call, along with Tony Evers, our governor, that will come before the Supreme Court, the state Supreme Court, in the next term, and that will, in essence, help decide what happens with abortion in Wisconsin. So, I think we've all heard so much about this through, you know, last fall's election and, you know, leading up to where we are today. But it really is that simple, that getting a progressive liberal judge on the court can help overnight, again, change what happens with abortion access in Wisconsin.
You know, actually, there are two judge interviews that we did this morning really can highlight that. Judge Everett Mitchell from Dane County, who we talked to in our first hour, pointed out that, you know, he went to the UW Law School, and their theme there is law in action. In other words, what does the law mean today and in the here and now compared to conservatives who say, we always talk about original intent. Well, if we're talking about original intent of a law, written by a bunch of white guys in 1849, you're going to interpret the law differently than if you have progressives on the court, if you have women on the court. You have a court that's majority women right now, but it's also majority conservative, and that's what makes this case special and what makes this election special.
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's worth noting with abortion too, that this taking this up through the courts is really the only way to address this in our state for the foreseeable future. We cannot address it through legislation with the current makeup of our state legislature, which we'll talk about next because it is so heavily skewed Republican. And we can't address it through a ballot initiative or referendum based on Wisconsin state laws. I know they just did something. They put it on the ballot in Kansas last fall or last summer, and we kind of saw that play out. That's not an option for our state either. So this is kind of our one path forward. And that's why this race in particular is so important.
Yeah, it's another basic point here when people say, how come you can't just be like Kansas? Because every state gets to set their rules differently for constitutional amendments and things like that. Wisconsin is not one of those states where the people can essentially put up a referendum that could amend the state constitution. Governor Evers has said he's willing to do it. Heck, even Senator Ron Johnson said, I'd like it just to be voted on by the people, even though he knows that's not a thing. And he couldn't get Republican legislators to change the rules because this way the Republican legislators stay in control. Which leads us to our next issue, and that's gerrymandering. Gerrymandering is just a fancy word for cheating by rigging the maps. And so which one of you wants to tackle how you first explain gerrymandering to people?
Yeah, I'll go into gerrymandering. And again, this is one of those terms I think probably a lot of your listeners who are pretty involved in politics and what's going on, it's, you know, very comes second nature to them. But a lot of people who don't follow politics as closely can, you know, it's like Jerry who? What is gerrymandering?
Yes.
So gerrymandering is just the act of redrawing the geographical lines of voting districts to favor one party or class. And here in Wisconsin, the current maps are very much favor Republicans because they're drawn by the state legislature, right? And Republicans are in control. So Wisconsin is a 50-50 state in statewide elections. And it's worth noting that four of the last presidential elections have been decided by less than a percentage point. And we saw that in the midterms too, or with how close those races came out. So out of the 33 state Senate seats, 21 are held by Republicans. And out of the 99 assembly seats, 64 are held by Republicans. So electing just another liberal justice could bring relief, as the Supreme Court has final say over state house redistricting disputes. It's not a guarantee that this would bring a Dem legislative majority, but it certainly might reverse a general trend of less competitive elections.
And it really raises the point of, you know, that Supreme Courts at the state level and the federal level, they do have the power to review things that might have felt settled. What do we mean? Well, you know, Roe v. Wade was said to be settled law for 49 years until it wasn't. And, you know, the things work the other way as well, that a court that previously, currently protects gerrymandering, if the majority changes, somebody could bring a case. And Nicole, we could look at this with a fresh set of eyes.
That's exactly it. And kind of along the same lines of the last topic, talking about abortion, this is our one avenue for this. Wisconsin is extremely gerrymandered. It's one of the top states in the country when it comes to that. You brought up our good friend Ron Johnson. I would argue that he might not be in office today if it were not for that. So I think this is one of those things that we just kind of get blind to because we live in it so much. It doesn't have to be that way. So this is another point where electing a liberal progressive justice can make a huge impact in the future of what happens in Wisconsin.
And it's not that the progressive justices would then sit down with a blank piece of paper, a blank map and an ink. You know, they could actually bring in people who could help draw maps that are fair.
That's the whole point. Just make it fair, right? It's what a crazy concept.
I know. So if you bring in somebody that, you know, specializes in nonpartisan redistricting, and some other states do that, you could have this here. And then that way, in a 50-50 state like this, you might have a 50-50 legislature. When people say, how come they all just can't get along? How come they can't compromise? Well, you sure do if it's more competitive, because you want to appeal to the moms and other folks who say, can't you all just cooperate the way we have to every day?
Yeah, I mean, you need to have lawmakers that represent the people of the state, and that's what this is all about and kind of the overall goal here.
Oh, and if we're talking about lawmakers who don't represent the state, again, yeah, somewhere in between 70 and 90% of the public favors anything from red flag laws and universal mm-hmm. background checks yep. for gun safety to nonpartisan redistricting to relaxed or legalized marijuana laws. All these things that have broad bipartisan Absolutely. Public support aren't getting done because of gerrymandering. And now once you've rigged the maps and once you're controlling the legislature, you want to control the game further, which is why we've seen this continued effort to suppress or diminish voting rights, which right. Again, really you're kind of attacking democracy itself. And it's especially noteworthy when you do that in a battleground state like Wisconsin.
Yeah, absolutely. Wisconsin is a key battleground state, and Republicans have been trying to control elections here for years. We just saw this past summer, the Supreme Court ruled that we could not use ballot drop boxes and things like that. And democracy, this is the one thing that's, this is why everybody around the country cares about this race so much. This is why everybody's talking about it, because it's going to impact likely presidential elections. And the way that our presidential elections work in this country is by the Electoral College, you know. And so in 2020, Donald Trump tried to appeal the decision. And in 2024, there will almost certainly be challenges to whatever, however the presidential elections play out here. So it's really important that we have a Supreme Court that is going to uphold democracy and rule in favor of fair and free elections.
And would a court actually attack democracy? Well, it's worth noting, and I mentioned this in my interview with Judge Protasiewicz as well, that if conservative Justice Hagedorn hadn't sided with democracy and instead had gone along with his right-wing justices, they may very well could have thrown out legitimately cast ballots in some of Wisconsin's largest cities, because that's what the Trump campaign wanted. But fortunately, Jill Karofsky earlier that year in 2020 had unseated conservative Dan Kelly, who's running again this time around. Mm-hmm. If Jill Karofsky had lost that state Supreme Court race in 2020, boy, you talk about chaos, Nicole, in our presidential politics. It's the difference that one vote makes on a court and that a little watched, little known state Supreme Court election can make in Wisconsin.
And also, I think the important part is we already know the playbook. They've already shown us how this works. It is incumbent upon us to now act accordingly. This is how we stop this from happening again. And to Kate's point before, in 2024, it's almost assured to happen again, or some version of it. So yeah, I guess to me, that is kind of where it's like, you can't just sit down and pretend like you didn't know, or, hey, where did this come from? This is how we stop it. This is how we ensure that the future is protected and is a fair and you know, accurate count of the votes. And then more importantly, democracy as a whole. But it is crazy that a small election or a small, you know, one state and small town voters and everything like that can really play a huge impact on the overall political picture.
It really is noteworthy. And like you said, it should tell you, past performance should be indicative when you go into the voting booth, that this is a court that has come very close in the past to overturning election results. This is a court that has suddenly out of the blue made up reasons to make drop boxes illegal. So they frankly should not get the benefit of the doubt, you know, when they talk a good game about democracy based on what they've already done. So that takes us to, again, sharing this information and what you tell folks. Obviously, I mean, starting first and foremost with, you ought to go vote.
Yes, get out there and vote. Like you talked about kind of right when we started, Pat, voter turnout is so key with these spring elections, especially these Supreme Court elections. 4 years ago in the Wisconsin Supreme Court election, I think it was just a difference of 6,000 votes. So it's really important to talk to all your friends and neighbors, make sure they're all getting out there to vote. Share this segment with people you know who may, you know, need more of a introductory view on some of these topics. And you can find us on Instagram at Motherhood for Good. If you have other people you want to share this with, and we talk about stuff like this all the time.
You've put up videos, you've put up graphics, and it's just an easy way for folks that don't want to, you know, listen to this guy prattle on for 2 hours, is that in more of a bite-sized way, You can take, you know, snippets of this interview and the things that you create on your own, Nicole. And are you getting good responses from the things that you've been putting up so far since Motherhood for Good came to be?
You bet. And it's growing every day. I think something Kate said early on that really is impactful is parenthood is political. You don't have an option. You can not act, but you're still that is an action in itself. So I think the most important thing you can do is get out there and vote. You can register same day. Bring your family, bring your friends, be loud about it. And I think just talking to your friends and family about it is one of the most impactful things you can do to ensure that we have a good voter turnout.
And as I've said before, just putting up a social media post that says, hey, I'm voting February 21st. Yes. You should too. Just that little thing. Nicole Slavin, Kate Duffy, thank you so much. We'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Thank you for having us. Have a good day.
You bet. We will talk to Terry Bell from the Civic Media Newsroom coming up next. You're up north. The old 97th, I guess, right?
That's right.
Okay, Terry Bell joins us now from the Civic Media Newsroom down in Madison, where that he's asked that they be his playing music. And
the pride of Dallas, Texas.
Dallas, Texas, okay.
Yeah.
Old 97s, does it mean that they're old and they formed it back in 1997, or is there more significance?
It has something to do with the train. I'd have to, I couldn't tell you off the top of my head. But yeah, there's an old ballad about a train. I think of the wreck of the old 97.
Okay.
And they took their name from that song.
Now I have something to Google. I have something else to Google besides is Rihanna pregnant? I need to update my search history. And so we'll add that instead.
This just in, yes, in fact, she is.
But what? You knew that. We have confirmation?
Oh yeah, that was going around the news sites last night.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like one person noted, you know, on social media, how great would it have been if she'd have turned the whole halftime show with the hundreds of millions of people watching into a gender reveal party? We could have, you know, had some fun with it.
Well, I think this way it was a lot safer. Don't people get
safer?
Hurt at gender reveal
safer.
Parties?
She's on this platform like 100 feet above the field. I mean, I don't know. She's braver than me, and she's also got a lot more money because they pay well for that. Sports headlines here at 7:52. The Badger men's basketball team lost at Nebraska on Saturday, 73-63 in overtime. It was not a pretty game at all. And they host Michigan tomorrow. Number 10 Marquette beat Georgetown 89-75 on Saturday, so they are alone in the Big East. And the Bucks carry a 10-game winning streak into the new week. They are at home tomorrow against the Boston Celtics. And, of course, Giannis was the leading vote-getter in the Eastern Conference for the All-Star Game, and that will be next Sunday, where he'll be making his seventh straight start and was voted a team captain for the third time. Terry now has three things you should know to get the week started. Terry, where do you want to begin?
Well, the first thing you need to know, even before we get into that, we have another unidentified flying object that was shot down. The Jets came out of Madison. They were actually
right.
Minnesota Air National Guard Jets, but they happened to be at Truax Field yesterday. Those are the Jets that went and shot those down. But getting into the three things we need to know, there's a dispute, and we really have been remiss not to pay more attention to this up to this point. There's a dispute going out in Lac des Flambeaux about the ownership of some roads in that community. And the local Lac des Flambeaux tribe has gone to the extent of blocking off access, putting up barricades to these roads. And it's causing a lot of problems in that community. People are being blocked off from their homes. People who need these roads to get to places where they can get food and medication are having a lot of difficulty. So local, tribal, and state governments have been called in to try to come to some kind of resolution of this conflict, and that will be taking up a lot of time and attention up in northern Wisconsin this week.
All right. It even got New York Times attention over the weekend with the subhead that tribal leaders in Lac des Flambeaux said they were asserting sovereignty in demanding long overdue payment for roads used by non-native residents who are now unable to drive home, which, again, this gets us to the basic notion when people say, you know, guys, why should we care about something like a state budget? You know, state budget immediately sounds boring. People want to tune it out. But state budgets are about as close as you can get to completely explaining why, especially at the state level, politics matters, who your legislator is matters, because it determines things like road aids and whether your roads are going to be continually upgraded, or in some rural communities, are they going to be turned back over into gravel rather than maintain the roads? And that's just one of a million things that are in a state budget. And Governor Evers, Terry, is going to unveil his priorities on Wednesday night.
More details trickled out over the weekend. He had new details on his proposal to cut taxes by more than $1.2 billion. Those are actually details of a plan that he first unveiled back in August. He wants to give a 10% state income tax cut for the middle class. So if you make less than $100,000 a year, or if you're a couple filing jointly under $150,000 a year, you would get to see a little bit of that relief. Also, Evers wants to increase the federal earned income tax credit to more than $300 a year for 200,000 families. He wants to enhance the homestead tax credit to help seniors and increase eligible household income to $35,000. And he wants to expand property tax relief for veterans with disabilities by $53.5 million over 2 years. There's a lot more, but it's a short segment, and those are just some of the highlights.
Right, and obviously a lot more to come for a budget that has to be agreed upon to be done on time, has to be done by June 30th. Of course, Republicans have already said, no matter what the governor introduces and talks about on Wednesday night, they're just going to throw it all in the wastebasket and then build their own budget and then make the governor, you know, do vetoes or compromises from there. Disrespectful as hell, not anything in keeping with tradition or in the leadership qualities we would expect from our elected officials. But then again, that's the way that that these folks play the game. And so we'll just have to watch how they put this budget together. So as if that weren't enough, three things about, you know, UFOs and road disputes up north and a state budget. But on top of that, you should know that, you know, with the state's 1849 abortion ban back into effect, women have to travel beyond state lines to get comprehensive health care services. It has led one woman to start a new clinic just over the border in Rockford, Illinois. And we will talk to her along with former state treasurer Sarah Godlewski in her Women Win Wisconsin segment. That's coming up on Wednesday morning at 7:30. And then tomorrow at 6:30, rather, we're going to be talking to Bryce Luchterhand from Clark County. He and his wife wanted to do what little they thought they could do to help refugees from Ukraine who are coming to the States. But it turns out they're able to do a lot, because when they put out the request for help from their community, they answered in a big way. So that's coming up on Tuesday. We got a rather busy week ahead, which we're all starting, Terry, just a little bit sleep deprived, as we always do day after the Super Bowl.
That's for sure. There's been so much talk about making this Monday a holiday, or moving the game to Saturday, or something like that. I don't know. I mean, I saw the end of the game. It was pretty exciting. And then I turned the TV off and I went to bed. No problem for me. But they had no problem. Packers weren't playing.
Well, those of us with 4:30 alarms, might beg to differ. And here's the thing: the Super Bowl's been getting later and later all the time. It was early January, mid January, then late January. Now here it is, mid February. And so I guess if they want to make it a holiday, just take it to its next logical step, and go ahead and move it one more week, the day before President's Day, and then we actually get the holiday. You know, because do we really have a holiday honoring presidents in this country? No, we're cynical about it. But now you make it a holiday that honors football. Well, hey, you know, maybe we've just invented the next great national holiday.
Something people can relate to.
they no doubt can. Terry Bell from the Civic Media Newsroom, thanks so much. Have a great week.
Thank you, Pat.
All right. So again, you can look for Bryce Luchterhand joining me tomorrow morning, and you can follow me all day, Pat Kreitlow up north on Facebook, Pat Kreitlow on Twitter. Next in Waukesha, Oshkosh, and Green Bay is Earl Ingram and the Gravedigger Gilbert Brown. Stephanie Miller is next in Madison. Todd Alba in Richland Center, Wausau, and Amory along the Civic Media Radio Network. Have a great Monday. We'll see you tomorrow.